where your opinion matters. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. It does matter very much indeed. How many people raise money for a particular cause, says the listener, to donate to one specific cause? Ukraine, orphans, Gaza, amputees, Chernobyl children. What's the difference between donating to help disadvantaged Irish people? Well, I suppose it goes with the ethos of the group that you're donating to. So you, if you want to donate to Chernobyl children, there are Chernobyl children's charities, you know, specifically what you're donating to. In relation to the local group, they help all families. So then to sort of stick in caveats goes against their ethos. On fishing, just listening to comments, fishing destroyed, Irish water, a disaster, farming, World Banks, TDs, civil servants. Aren't we being loyal? I.e. screwed up, except it's not by the Crown, but our very own, the multi-millionaires, the so-called NGOs. Ireland is on the brink of losing its identity, sovereignty, ability to feed its own population. What to be done? Morning, Greg. To your caller, Gary. I didn't hear Gary or too many on the radio supporting an Irish family who lost their rented home to a foreign family. Please don't say you haven't heard this, as it was on the news and in local newspapers. How is this situation fair? Well, I'm going to say I didn't hear that. I'm not saying it didn't happen. Loads of you texting in relation to that. I'll get to more of those in a moment. I want to go now, though, to Siobhan Harkin, Director of Paediatric Nursing with the HSE North West West. Good morning to you, Siobhan. Thank you so much for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. Glad to meet you and your listeners this Monday morning.
Now, families with lived experience of caring for a child with a life-limiting illness who have experienced the death of a child are invited to take part in a family engagement workshop. And the function of purpose of this workshop, sorry, Siobhan.
Yes, I suppose I'll give a little bit of a background first, Greg. I think that might be helpful.
Yes, for sure. Last
year, we asked families across the West and Northwest to join us in a research study, and we asked them what was important to them in terms of caring for a child with a life-limiting condition and parents who had lost children previously. And they told us they wanted care to be coordinated. They'd like to have a hub where care could be coordinated through, and they'd like a place. So a lot of them had experience of attending Laura Lynn Children's Hospice in Dublin, but that's a bit of a journey. And they felt they wanted a place that would be nearer, more accessible. So move on now to 2026, and we are now the HSE is partnering with the Mayo Roscommon Hospice Foundation, who are willing to build this place. We want to go back out to parents, because the design of a new children's hospice needs to be informed by parents. We need, their experiences are so unique in terms of caring for a child with a life-limiting condition, or parents whose child has died. So not only the parents, but the siblings, and indeed the children themselves. So we would like families to come to Donegal next Saturday to the Abbey Hotel. And we're starting at 9 and we'll be there till 1. And we want them to share with us what matters most to them in terms of a new children's hospice, in terms of the design. So if they went into it, what would they like to see? What would be important to them? And some of these parents have already been in Laura Lynn, so they have that experience, and some haven't because it's so far away. Mm. And also what type of services, what is important to them?
But it would help. It really is an invaluable gift too, I suppose. You could look at it that, because for some, unfortunately, they may have had this experience and have lost their child, but they are in a unique position to try and ensure the other families that invariably, very sadly, will get this news or have this change in their life, that their experience is as positive a one as can be. So in a way, and it could even be in the memory of someone you've lost, it might be difficult, but it would be a wonderful gift, I think, to give others who may be going through or have to experience what you went through.
Absolutely. And we found that last year when we had done our research, parents very generously shared their experiences. And it's often when you've had time maybe to reflect on what happened to your family, and maybe what could have been better for you, what would have, you know, improved things, or what really worked well. And indeed, I suppose we understand that it's sensitive, and it can be difficult to revisit in those memories. So this engagement or this meeting will be dealt with very sensitively. There will be support there. And so I suppose we want to, as you said, that there's about honouring the memory, but it's about honouring that experience and understanding your experience and understanding what would you want. You know, I would, for me, and I think for our colleagues that are working together, we would like to see when families go into the hospice that they recognize it. They're going, okay, this is, you know, this is what we wanted. So like on the day, the architects who are designing this hospice will be there. So also one of our consultants, who Dr. Simon Woods, who is our new consultant in the HSC West Northwest, who has a special interest of working with children in palliative care. So he will be there. I will be there. So we are going to, you know, ask parents, ask families, ask siblings questions, you know, look for their input and take that all on board.
Yeah. So now, this is a significant development. This is the first children's hospital to be built outside the capital. And it's the first major project of its kind built nationally for, you know, well over a decade, 2011, I believe the last is. What is the time frame of this? Obviously, clearly, the Mayo Roscommon Hospice Foundation, they say they're going to fund it. I presume that, you know, a lot of work is ongoing. When do they expect to begin construction, if it hasn't started already? And when might this facility be available for those it suits better than the Dublin facilities?
Great question, Greg. So at the moment we're on, I suppose, moving towards planning. So first of all, the Mayo Roscommon Hospice Foundation have acquired a site. So there is a site. It is in Castlebar. The second piece then is to finalise designs for the hospice and go towards planning. We're hoping that that will happen in April, May time, and then to get through the planning process. So it's hard to know how long that will take, but we do have a lot of support through the council, and there has been a lot of engagement with the Mayo Roscommon Foundation and the council. So then it goes to build. So realistically, I think we're looking towards 2028. However, I just want to say that services are already being provided to children and families across our whole region. As I said, we have our consultant in place. In each of our counties, we have a clinical nurse coordinator for life-limiting conditions.
And I know the Donegal Hospice does an awful lot of space.
Yes, exactly. And our existing hospices, you know, provide a lot of support for these families. Okay. I suppose the benefit of this building, it will be somewhere for families to go. And a children's hospice, I suppose, it's end-of-life care is only one element of what they provide. And that's, I suppose, different. We want children to thrive. There's, when you go to a children's hospice, it could be for symptom management. It could be for planned respite. It could be for an emergency respite. Mm-hmm. It's sibling, family supports. There can be, you know, a therapeutic interventions for the family. It could be about the coordination of care. Mm-hmm. And so it's very, very, I suppose, different things that happen within a children's hospice setting.
And I think a lot of the, it's very good to get that information out there for the general population. I think a lot of the people we're appealing to today, you know, would have an understanding of all those different experiences, as we would with the sort of adult hospice. Palliative care is not always end-of-life care. And it's from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. and it's in the Abbey Hotel. There'll be tea and coffee available as well, a light lunch served at 1. And if you are able to attend, please confirm your attendance by emailing the Family Engagement Workshop, Marie, M-A-R-I-E, at hospice.ie. Any of those information, or if you need a phone number, contact us and we'll make sure to pass on the relevant information. Thank you so much for your time, Siobhan.
Thank you, Greg.
Bye-bye. Take care. That's Siobhan Hawken, Director of Paediatric Nursing, HSE West Northwest. OK, on the issue of donations, well done to Gary and his team on being principled. Regardless of your colour, creed or religion, if you're in need, what matters is that help is there for you. Shame on the individual who said they were only interested in looking after one group of people. On the issue of finance, hi Greg, can you find out why we are paying $132 million to the World Bank and what it's for? It's much more than that, but yes, of course I will. Well, I can get the official line whether or not we buy that or not. We'll have a chat about it, yeah? Nice little, well, can't use that word. Nice little uplift by Pascal with Irish taxpayers' cash to World Bank. Didn't do his job prospects any harm, did it? What a country we live in. On the issue of water, hi Greg, living in the Lifford area, have carers calling in to shower a family member this morning at 7:45 a.m. They were unable to do so as the water was turned off. Surely if water pressure is turned down or off, it should be put back on before 7 a.m. as most people need it. If they're going to work or school and leaving at 8 a.m. please can you get an explanation from Ishka Ireland or Ishka Aaron regarding this practice? Thank you. Of course we will try. Back to the donations. I personally would not give a donation to any organisation that's funded by TUSLA. Now, this is an area where we have to be really careful in that, I don't want to sound preachy, there are people of genuine concerns about TUSLA, and it seems that every time we have one concern, another one comes along. That being said, there are fantastic agencies that are funded by TUSLA, independent of TUSLA, other than the money that they receive. And it would be a darn shame if they were to lose out because of question marks over TUSLA. That's all I will say in relation to that. I have expressed concern myself in terms of certain cases that TUSLA have been involved in, but please, TUSLA support other agencies that work very, very well and very, very hard. And I get where you're coming from, but just think it through logically. Big deal, says listener. It's up to the donator to decide their preference, not up to him to decide. Maybe we aren't all treated equally with accommodation and travel perks, etc. And last one on this issue, just for now, in reference to the donation to Irish families only, this donation for only Irish families is fair and just. How much money is made available in this wee country for immigrants? Only money that's not for Irish families. The Irish are being discriminated against every day. This man needs to think of the country he's living in first. Listen. You know, if we were getting stories back from the United States or Australia or elsewhere that Irish families were being discriminated in this regard, you know, young babies not being afforded nappies and baby wipes and Sudocrem because they happen to be Irish, we'd be up in arms. I take where you're coming from. The LYFS works with all families to support them, especially in the area of support for looking after kids and babies and stuff. This doesn't matter what colour their skin is or where they're from, folks. Their babies, their children, their young mums. You know, do we need to just have a look at ourselves and not lose our humanity altogether? Because what we have, what's happening here, it sounds to me, is that the plight of babies and young mums is being tied in with other frustrations people might have in terms of immigration, etc. And just, we need to weed it out and think for ourselves. We really need to think for ourselves. Right, let's go to Kevin, who's a resident in Far Hill Lodge, Dunloe. Good morning to you, Kevin. How are you keeping? Hello.
Morning. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
My apologies. Slight delay on the line. I have you now. Right, you are amongst those with concerns over the lack of clarity on construction work at Far Hill Lodge in Dunloe. What's the background to this, Kevin?
It's a three-story building, apartment building, social housing that's managed and owned by an organisation called Respond. The ground floor was lying vacant for 10 years plus.
Mm-hmm.
Funding was made available to convert it then into 8 two-bedroom apartments for much-needed social housing, which is all well and good. The works was slated to take 4 to 6 months, and here we are, 29 months later, and there's still no end in sight to the works.
Go on ahead, please carry on. I thought you'd pause there, Kevin.
No. The communication from Respond with the residents has been non-existent, apart from the odd text message and one very disingenuous attempt to meet the residents. where they contacted us the evening before to say they'd be here in the morning, which gave nobody any notice to be available. Now, two major issues have arisen that we're aware of, serious issues. There's major structural issues that have been ongoing here in the building with extremely large cracks in the building all over, inside and outside. So there's concerns about mica. Now, core drilling was done back last year or maybe the year before. We were told verbally that there was nothing to worry about, but I believe the council have been told something very different. The sources have told me. So we need to know what the issues are there. And there's also a major fire issue, fire safety issue. They discovered when they commenced the works that there was a fire barrier that's supposed to be in the walls and the ceilings that was absent. Now, at the time the building was constructed, it was not a legal requirement to have this barrier fitted. So it's understandable that it's a retrofit situation. But this is the same issue that shut down Priory Hall in Dublin. I don't know if you remember that.
Of course I do,
the entire building had to be evacuated because of fire risk. But they've been untruthful.
We have to be careful with the... but it could have been a miscommunication. Or just be really careful with our language, Kevin. But I understand your concerns. I'm not trying to mute you. You understand that?
No, I understand. I'm trying to be diplomatic in the way I word.
Appreciate it.
They're not forthcoming. They're not forthcoming with the information.
You haven't got the information that. Exactly. So, if there's a couple of key questions here, A, what is the exact situation in terms of the retrofitting of this fire retardant system? B, is this building affected by defective concrete blocks? Any other questions that you'd be keen to get a response to?
Absolutely. The building has been allowed to fall into a total state of disrepair. The building looks derelict. If you were to drive by the building now and look, I've sent through photographs here. We have them up there on the screen, actually. It looks derelict. It actually looks worse than what you're looking at right there. That's an old photograph. Most of the paint that you see on that image on your screen is gone. It's down to bare plaster. There's mold on the walls. The cracks are getting noticeably bigger.
Paint coming away from walls would be I would really want to be checking out what's going on here if that's happening, you know.
Oh, it's in a horrific state. It's the talk of the town, the building. People are asking if the building is derelict, if we're being moved out. There's a new project currently being built of social housing, and the people are of the opinion that this is being shut down and we're being moved up there, which is not the case. There's a lot of rumours which tend to fly in the lack of information.
How many apartments are there currently, Kevin?
There's 20 apartments with 21 residents. Many of the residents are elderly. So some have mobility issues. Some have vision impairment. And to tolerate construction works for 2.5 years is just ridiculous. The quality of life is on the floor here for the residents, and they're sick looking at it. And the people of the town, they're ashamed when visitors come to visit.
Right. Well, what we are
once the pride. It was once. Sorry, Greg.
It's just delay on the line, Kevin. It's affecting both of us. What we're going to do is try and get some of the answers that you've given to us on air and off air as well. Try and get some clarity. I think, you know, we as humans are really good when we have information, right? We can process it. We can deal with it. We can make allowances if need be. The vacuum of no information can lead to concerns, misinformation. And I think in a situation like this, the more open and transparent everyone is, the better it is. And we'll endeavour to try and make that so, Kevin.
Yeah, well, absolutely brilliant. And I 100% agree with you. Once people are in possession of the facts, they can deal with it.
Yeah, that's
it. The problem here is different stories are flying around. And I have evidence where we've been told one thing and the council have been told something completely different. Which I don't know who's been misled, whether it's us or whether it's the council, but there's serious issues over response management to this situation.
Okay, listen, thank you very much for your time, Kevin, I must move on. I do appreciate it because Micheál Colm McGillan-Asbaugh, a local councillor, was speaking to the newsroom too in relation to this. Let's hear what he had to say.
Well, to be very honest, first thing I would like to say is I think it's an absolute disgrace that this AHB has been given massive taxpayers' money. And here we are at a time, due to government policy, that we are finding homelessness at a record high. In my own municipal district area, we have quite a high number of homelessness, and we have a building that belongs to Response, paid by taxpayers' money, and they were to build on the ground floor 8 two-bedroom apartments. Them 8 two-bedroom apartments started works a number of years ago, which is no reflection whatsoever onto the contractor, and yet to this day, them apartments haven't been finished. Now, the HSE and Respond entered into an agreement which ended up that the ground floor laid empty for many, many years, which that itself is immoral and a disgrace.
All right, that was the local councillor there, Micheál Colm McGillan-Asbaugh, who's also been speaking in relation to or on that topic. 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts. On the issue of rats, Greg, we always keep Tory clay in our home and it does work. Please don't be or no need to be disrespectful because you are from the other side of the county and don't realise the value we have for it. Rosaline Connolly, thank you. I wouldn't dream of being disrespectful. What I was saying quite simply was, is this is not to doubt it. It would be, as someone who is interested in content creation, a fascinating documentary to listen to, I think, or to watch in any case. I have my own personal beliefs and all of that kind of stuff. They might align with yours, so we shouldn't be too quick to judge each other either. On the issue of fishing, I'm a small business person supplying to these boats and I'm in the Inishowen area. There's a massive knock-on effect. It's not just the fishermen who are being put out of business. There is a chain of people being hit. Very good point. Thank you. On the controversy surrounding that donation, the guy needs to cop himself on. Look after the Irish people first. He's living in Peter Pan world. Look after the Irish families first, full stop. He should have taught this person by taking his donation and carry on business as usual. Back to fishing. Isn't it so sad, our traditional way of life, our fishing now and our farming, just being given away by our TDs, civil servants and the EU. Another. Why aren't our government looking out for us in Europe instead of bending over backwards in Brussels? This government, this government has sold the fishermen out. Say what we want, but it's them who made it the situation as it is. Okie doke. Now we are joined on the program by Paddy Brown, also known, of course, on social media as the Viking Dipper. Paddy, thanks for joining me. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Great. How was your weekend?
It was lovely. It was a busy one.
Really? But everyone says quiet, but it's good. It's busy, is it?
I was busy. I was down in Dublin last night and I had to travel back up, so it was busy enough. And I'm feeling a bit tired still here today, Greg.
All right. Well, listen, you'll sleep better tonight. We're talking to you in the context of something you've been talking about, and that is you're seeking an ADHD diagnosis. So why now? And what brought you to this point before we talk about the difficulties therein, Paddy?
Well, it's the start of the year, 2026, you know, the way everyone does their new year, new me, and you set yourself a few goals and things like that. Well, one of mine was to finally get this, to go for this ADHD review, because having speaking to other people that have it and having wee moments of thought myself, I related to a lot of what I was being told and what I was reading. And I just really want to find out for myself, you know, maybe if I have it or not. And, you know, I don't even mind how long it's going to take. It's just kind of for peace of mind, you know.
Would you feel that you kind of know? Is that what's taking you on this journey?
Yeah, I feel like I relate to a lot of things, like, Greg, like, you know, there's a few questions on the questionnaire and a few of them I'd be nodding my head going, well, that's kind of me, you know, like, yeah. And other wee things too that are on it. I'm like, I do feel like I may have it, to be honest.
And what has been the process then so far? You say, right, okay, this might make some things make sense. But I want to, you know, I want to know formally. I want to get a diagnosis right. So what has surprised you, or what's been your experience in down this road so far, Paddy?
Right. So I've only began this last week, Greg.
Yeah.
And I've went into the doctor, lovely doctor, and I spoke to her, and she told me that a lot of people in their older years have come forward and have felt this as well. So the process was, there's an evaluation sheet, which I'm not very impressed with, Greg. So they give you that, and you have to fill it out. It's basically, I have it in front of me, it's 3 pages long, and you fill that out and you have to drop it back. Now, this evaluation sheet is for a child, you know, it really is. There's no mention of adult on it, except for in the second part of the little questions, it says, if you are an adult, but most of it doesn't really cater to somebody of my age.
Right.
And that's the first thing I noticed. Now, when I send this away, it could take up to 2 years for me to be diagnosed through this method. And if I wanted to find out a little quicker, I could get a private diagnosis, Greg.
And do you think that's right? Because, Paddy, some listening might say that in a child's situation, so that's where the resources go, it's a need, not necessarily a want. But in your situation, at this stage in your life, this diagnosis is a want, maybe, rather than a need. And maybe adults should expect delays in. I'm only putting this out here for the purpose of conversation. It's not an opinion, Paddy. But you get where I'm coming from, that if we do...
Oh, 100%, Greg. And I definitely agree, because even whenever I see some of the questions, like, I'm an adult, I can actually, you know, withhold, even though I have the urge, I can withhold, you know, I have a bit more control. Now, I'm sure there's also different levels of ADHD, but 100% there is, I agree with you there on that, Greg.
So what are you going to do? Are you going to, I mean, I'm not asking about your finances. I hope you know. I don't think I am, but
don't worry.
I don't think any of us necessarily have, you know, 15 or 1700 euro, you know, just to chuck away. How important is this? You've started the process. I think you're doing invaluable work in getting the information out there about this form, which, you know, it's crazy that there isn't one that's, you know, articulated with an adult in mind. So are you going to sit on it and wait and see how the public system works? Or has this got into you now at the point whereby you probably need to try and make it work for you privately?
Well, no, that's the thing. I'm in no panic. You know, I don't feel like, you know, it's changing me or anything. It's just more for peace of mind. And just touching on the private thing, It is very expensive. And I think that would put a lot of people off, because you could pay the 1500, 1700, and you mightn't even get, you know, you might be told that you're not.
Yeah.
You know, and you, it might, you know, after having all these feelings. So I think that puts a lot of people off going down the private route, and maybe also is a reason why it takes so long for you to get the results going down, you know, just following the normal, you know, without... Yeah.
Listen, I know you're obviously very active on social media with your influencing and everything else that you do, right? But it's not easy either at the same time to put yourself out there in the personal sense, i.e., I wonder, do I have ADHD? And I wonder, in doing so, firstly, I think it's good to normalise the conversation, though we're doing well in that regard to some extent already, but I think particularly in terms of adults, but also to what you're getting back from the people you're engaging with. Talk to me about, you know, what people have said to you about you sharing your own personal situation, but also to what has come back to you for people who, because we're good people, right, to sort of offer you support or advice in this space.
Yeah, well, a lot of people have, some people have said, oh my God, this is me. You know, I feel the same way. Others were actually right there in the doctors, their local doctors or GPs, going in to do the same thing. And then people with ADHD were reassuring me and telling me, you know, it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It just means that, you know, your brain's a little bit wired differently. And thank you for, you know, just putting it out there and not being ashamed, you know, to say it. And I never ever would feel, you know, embarrassed or anything or shamed about speaking about something like that, because at the end of the day, it's not a lack of intelligence. It's just a struggle with regulation. So
it's just brains working in different ways. But what it does is, though, it can make sense, and it also can adjust how we do things going forward as well to make our life as fleeting as it is as easy as is possible. Keep us updated. I mean, obviously, you're going to keep your followers updated. You can check out Paddy across social media, the Viking Dipper. There's lots of content there. But it's an interesting one, Paddy. Keep us updated. Anything you want to add just whilst we have the opportunity?
Yeah, just there when we're talking about it, a lot of people too, and myself as well,
yeah,
it would make me think back to my school days.
Mm-hmm.
And I that's where I was the most. I was like, oh my God, you know what? Maybe that's because,
well, you
that's
see, Paddy, I didn't
I had
want
such a problem at school.
I didn't want to pry too much into that because I wasn't really sure how much you shared. And that's why what I meant by things start to make sense. A lot of people as adults, I've spoken to so many of them with a later in life diagnosis of ADHD or others. It gives them some peace because their school life often was very, very difficult, and they were deemed to be, you know, a messer or bold or whatever. And it can make a lot of sense and bring a lot of comfort to some people, depending on their personality in adult life. You know, things can start to make sense. That's what I was getting at. So it's interesting you picked up on that yourself, Paddy.
Yeah. So make sure, don't be getting Gracie Peoples or Annette Gallagher on here they were my school teachers there now. So,
well, I want to know what they've got to say about you now. You shouldn't have mentioned the names. They can private message me on Facebook.
but at the end of the day, anyway, it's just about getting a bit of clarity and hopefully encouraging others to ask some questions too, Greg, because it's just about understanding yourself. You know, just can change everything. That's all I'm looking to do, really, with
this. No, I get you.
I will do a few updates.
All right, look after yourself, Paddy. Keep up the great work. Thanks very much indeed. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Right now, the cost of posting a letter is going up again. Stamp prices to increase in line with European postal rates to safeguard services. Caroline wanted me to mention this because I think it's an age thing, isn't it? No, it's not. Am I in trouble? Sorry. But anyway, falling letter volumes and rising overheads for fixed cost networks are resulting in stamp increases globally. So the national stamp will be 185 from Tuesday, the 3rd of February. That's an increase of 20 cents. 380 rate for Europe. I think Onpost are more interested in delivering parcels. I think the delivering letters now, they can charge what they like because there's not enough people that are going to be bothered by this unless you're in business and you rely on this area quite extensively. So maybe you are vexed about the increase to postal deliveries. Your letter is ETC. Let us know. 086 60 25,000. I'm joined in studio now by Corinne Temple of the digital media team here at Highland Radio. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you keeping?
All good, yeah.
Good to have you in us. Right, okay, so it's nearly upon us, the Hospitality Awards 2026. And this is our, hard to believe now, third Hospitality Awards. Talk to us about them.
Yes, so we're launching them here now this morning. And it's the third year, as you said. They're kind of solidified now in the awards calendar. Our hospitality and our customer service and businesses kind of be waiting on us to launch them. So it's the same format as other years. You have four categories. You have your restaurant, bar and pub, hotel and tourism and entertainment. And it's a really, really simple process to go on and nominate your favourite business. It's live now on our website on highlandradio.com. And all we ask is the business name, location, the category you want to nominate them in, your name and why you're nominating them.
Okay, and it all culminates then in a big night in the wonderful, make sure I get this right, Jackson's Hotel.
Jackson's Hotel. So this year it'll be on the 1st of March, so it's Sunday the 1st of March, in Jackson's Hotel in Belle Buffet.
Yeah, and I think a testimony to the establishment of these awards in the calendar of awards, and there's very little happens at this scale in this part of the world, is big sponsors coming on board again.
That's it. Like, we have Donegal County Council and Fáilte Ireland on board for a second year. We also have our category sponsors, Northwest Gas, Safetec and Airgrid, and they've been with us for a few years as well. So it really feels good for us to have them back on board, because it means that, you know, they feel that they want to be part of it, and that they feel it's important for their brand to be alongside it. So it's good for us that they want to be partnering with us.
There are four headline categories, as you mentioned: restaurant, bar and pub, hotel, tourism, entertainment, but a lot of subcategories underneath that. The idea is that these awards catch all types of hospitality businesses and services.
So we have 40 categories in total that you can nominate. So I'll just give you some examples, because we're not going to list out the full 40 here now. So you have Best Cafe, Best Burger, Restaurant of the Year, Best Family Venue, Tourist Attraction of the Year, Best Beer Garden, Bar Person, Pub of the Year, Best Hotel Spa and Hotel of the Year. And again, that's just an example of some of them that you can nominate under. So there's a huge range there. And, you know, you can be nominated under two or three of those categories as well that suit the business. So
Obviously, it's up to, you know, clients, customers to nominate as well. But businesses can, there's no harm in getting the message out there as well to say, right, look, these awards are upcoming. Give us a vote if you're happy with the service that you're getting.
Exactly. And there's actually a feature on the website. So there's a wee poster that you can download that says nominate us. You can put that around your business. You can share it on your socials. So that's live there now on highlandradio.com. So yeah, there's absolutely no harm in asking your followers, your customers to nominate you as well if they aren't familiar with it. It's a good way of getting them to give you a wee nomination.
Yeah, because it's an important space to be engaging with your customers as well. And it's a great way for the public to give back to businesses, local businesses that, as I've said in the past, are supporting the community. They provide services. They're making money, of course, but they're big employers, the big supporters of local initiatives and all that kind of stuff. So again, how do people nominate?
So highlandradio.com, there'll be a wee banner there on the homepage, and click into that. And as I say, it'll take less than a minute to get your nomination in. So it's definitely worth doing it. We use these businesses all the time. So it's nice just to give them a wee bit of recognition.
Yeah, and again, if you are a business owner, go and check the categories. The categories have been set up so that your business, if you are in the hospitality space, your business will be there to check it out, get the poster and, you know, get the message out, get that interaction going with your customers.
Exactly. And the night itself, Greg, it's such a fun night from the minute people come through the door. There's just such a feel-good factor and it's lovely to just have something positive like that to look forward to in your business and to celebrate with your team as well.
Yeah, and a great night out and a great venue as well.
Exactly.
Jackson's is stunning.
Oh, it's great. And we work so well with them, and they know the running of how we want things to go on the night. So it just makes it less stressful for all of us as well.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, check out the website.
Lovely, yep.
Highlandradio.com. Thank you so much, Corinne. I really appreciate that. Let's get to some of your comments here that have been coming in. A lot of you interested in US affairs. A caller says, you've got America trying to destroy international law. Right, I'll come back to that, because there's a couple of words in there that are just thrown me off to the point where I can't actually catch up. Back on that issue, though, UN Charter is not worth the paper they're written on. People are dumb. Trump is a puppet for the dumb people to blame. Who's he a puppet of, though? Geopolitics is a soap opera, and the dumbed down, vaccinated, fluoridated people only have the attention span for the next headline. Next week will be something else, and this will be forgotten. On the issue of donations, the Irish have to work anywhere in the world they want. They don't get handouts. Greg, nothing to do with pulling people's heartstrings. Most of the immigrants are coming here for handouts. Ask Roderick O'Gorman. Oh, that's that tweet he sent out. Do you know the amount of Irish people who are living in London who went over there to work, and they don't have family over there anymore? They've got nowhere to come home from to, I don't pull stuff out of my backside and start talking about it. I know in London, for an example, and other UK cities and other places around the world, that there comes a time where, you know, people need support. And it's only for people's generosity and caring and lack of discrimination in other parts of the world that we get looked after when we need it to. Please think on the wider issues. I'm not trying to convince you which way to think, but let's not get so stuck into this politics of left and right that we don't actually understand the reality as well, that there's something that happens somewhere in between as well. On the issue of a TV license, I've been watching Corrie and Emmerdale. Emmerdale isn't on until 8 p.m. There's an American TV show from the 80s on before that. Bradley Walsh and Tipping Point is on all day too. Why do we pay a TV license for a very old program? Is it not worth, it's not worth paying for? That's what a lot of people think, and that's why I suppose payments are down. Conformity is down. On post, we talked a little earlier on about stamps going up. I got a letter today posted the 12th of December in London. What's going on with on post? I got five other Christmas cards posted in Ireland. Can anyone explain? Well, it could be the UK post office as well. Who's to say? I don't know. But I'm not going to be able to get to the bottom of that one. Listen, thank you very much for all of your comments coming in today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. That's where we have to leave it for this Monday on The Greg Hughes Show. We'll be back to do it all again with you tomorrow morning from 9. Don't forget, if you missed anything, you can catch up on the podcast, which will be live on our website before 12. But for me, Greg Hughes, and the team, have a great day.